This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Checkpoint Intimates.
And you are here with another episode of Checkpoint Intimates, the weekly gaming show where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot. I am joined by Cameron.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we doing?
Yeah, right.
Getting ready for some intimacy?
Okay. I feel threatened.
Don't feel threatened, because today we are talking about hero shooters.
Yay?
And yay, yeah. I think so too. I mean, hero shooters, for those who are unaware, are kind of these... I guess you call them class-based shooters, where you can play different classes, different personalities, and jump onto the battlefield, each playable with their own different style, and you just, like, yeah, whatever it ends up being, whether it's an arena shooter or whether it's, like, a deathmatch, or they're all these kind of hero shooters.
Yeah, it's kind of filled in that void that we had where shooters were really popular, and it was just kind of everyone was on the same, and you had one thing to do, and hero shooters is more focused on that kind of... balancing out of, oh, you're not great at running to the front line and getting in amongst it, well, maybe try this one.
Yeah, it's like diversifying the type of gameplay you can experience depending on which character you pick. And in that kind of sense, there's also this team synergy thing, which is like a whole nother aspect to hero shooters that don't exist in traditional shooters.
And I think that is what will make or break a hero shooter, is if you can give a team that complements each other.
Mm.
If you have a hero shooter where it's all about solo performance, I think that misses the point of a hero shooter. I think it should be about how you perform with your teammates and, you know, utilizing powers and skills and that kind of thing.
Agreed. Yeah. And the reason we're talking hero shooters is because, it's been prevalent for a while, ever since Overwatch. Like, hero shooters, just the word hero shooter, you'll probably hear more and more.
Mm.
But, In recent times, Lawbreakers has just come out. A game called Gigantic came out maybe a few weeks before that.
Yep.
These are both hero shooters that are trying to break into this really congested market with a lot of other games. And not only that, but a couple of days ago, the developers who made Warframe announced their game called Amazing Externals, which is going to be yet another hero shooter.
Which is also taking in, apparently, one of the other big genres that's having a boom lately, which is the card collecting game.
Yeah, maybe the next intimates we have to talk about CCGs, because everyone wants to make a CCG, everyone wants to make a hero shooter, and Amazing Externals is going to be a mix of the two.
Well, I think it's a big thing that has shown, and it's one of the problems that comes with a hero shooter is that I don't think there's a hero shooter out there that doesn't involve microtransactions.
Yes.
And in doing that, and it's the same with card collecting games, there's always microtransactions. And so what you're doing is you're able to give a lot more longevity to the income source from your game without really having to do too much. Like, it's not a huge world building.
You don't have to, but I feel like a lot of developers do a lot in that kind of space as far as continual content and whatnot.
100%. Overwatch, for one, have consistently giving... And I think that's the big thing from them is they have, you know, you pay outright at the beginning and then you can buy more of those loot boxes if you want it, but every bit of content from there on out, completely free.
Yes.
And that, I think, is a huge thing. You know, adding new characters, adding new maps, adding new game modes, which I feel like if something like Call of Duty, I feel like you used to have to maybe buy
extra buy a characters map pack or stuff like that.
Yeah. So this one, I think, in fact, I think Titanfall did it most recently, where they released some new stuff for multiplayer that you had to purchase. Star Wars Battlefront did it, where half the game ends up being closed off to you if you don't get the season pass.
Which is a really terrible idea, I think, in this gaming landscape, because you're splitting the player base. Like, if you release a map pack, all of a sudden there's, like, half the people who played your game owns these maps and half don't. And all of a sudden, like, the player base is split, which is really unfortunate because it affects matchmaking. It affects the amount, like, the quantity of players you can team up with and stuff. So, yeah, hero shooters tend to do it a bit differently. They're kind of part of this modern boom of shooters where, like, not everything is new, like this new age kind of microtransaction scheme.
Yeah, everything now kind of has to have an ongoing finance idea of how it's going to keep financing itself over the years. And microtransactions and the loot box and the loot crate system are like that. I like the way Gigantic does it, where it's similar to Heroes of the Storm, where each week or each day they will cycle the available characters for that are available for free, because it's a free-to-play game.
Yep.
And it'll cycle the characters that are available for free. If you really love a character, you can buy them so you can use them at all times. And I think it's that mix of... I actually quite like that. I think that's a good way.
I think that's a better system than loot boxes, personally. Yeah.
And it also then puts you into a position that, oh, I don't feel like buying a character, but I want to try something new. I'll try one of the ones that's coming up. So it also then forces some variety. I notice in Heroes of Storms, I see that a lot. There's like that variety
of characters. And presumably you can buy those characters with in-game currency as well. Like, you don't have to spend a single
cent in real-world money. You can, yeah. So with Gigantic, you can build up. It takes a while, obviously, as it would. Otherwise, they wouldn't get any money for it if it didn't take some time. But you can build up your in-game currency from winning, from completing challenges, that kind of thing. They have a really cool system where... you get tarot cards, and so what it is at the start of the day, you'll have like 7 tarot cards up on the thing, and you can take 3 of them with you, so you can look through the different challenges for the day and go, oh, okay, I think I can achieve that. I'll take that one, and I'll take that one, and I'll take that one.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good system. Gigantic is actually a really good game, and I hope it kind of takes off.
Yeah, well, I agree. I haven't played Gigantic yet. It's been one of those games that have been on my list for ages because it just looks fantastic. Like, it really looks like a fun game, and it's completely free, so there's no barrier for entry. And it's the kind of thing, it's like, well, I may as well try it out. If it's free, maybe I won't put money towards it if it's not my kind of thing, but you know.
And I think that it's things like with Lawbreakers, I felt like it came from a free-to-play model. Earlier this year, they announced that there would be a one-time purchase instead, with microtransactions still involved.
Mm.
And I feel like that's to its detriment. I think people played the beta that wasn't that long ago, and everyone kind of went, well, I'm not going to pay for this game. But I think if it was free to play, it would have a much bigger opening.
Well, that's the risk you take, right? Like, Overwatch made this move where they would said, like, we're big enough, we're going to make people pay for a full-price game and then charge microtransactions. And they got away with it because it's Blizzard. Right? So they can do that. Whereas other games, like Gigantic, will look at it and go, we're not big enough, we're going to do a free-to-play model, hopefully that'll get people in, they'll realize how good our game is, and then they'll purchase extra things. Lawbreakers thought they could do the Overwatch thing, and I honestly think they're shooting themselves in the foot, because I just see Lawbreakers kind of falling to the wayside pretty soon.
I think, if I'm being honest, I think it will be free-to-play within the year.
Yeah, it'll do a Battleborn.
It'll do a Battleborn, and... unfortunately, if it does what Battleborn does, it'll shoot itself in the foot too early that it can't recover. Battleborn, there was someone on the 1-year anniversary of Battleborn decided to log on to Battleborn and see how long it took for them to get into a match. And after half an hour, they gave up.
Yeah, that's not good. See, if that's happening like to your game, you know your multiplayer is dead.
Yep.
And at that point, it's like, well, how do you even salvage this?
And I'm pretty sure this was even in the single-player campaign, so they only needed another 4 players to match up with.
Right, yeah.
And there was no one. single-player, sorry, the cooperative.
Yeah,
campaign. It's like I said in my review of Lawbreakers, these games live based off their community.
Yep.
And if you have no community, your game is dead in the water. And Overwatch is very smart in the way that they have actually done a fair bit of undermining of other hero shooters in the genre.
They did. They kind of ruined Battleborn single-handedly, almost.
Yeah, and they've done it to Lawbreakers as well, because the day that Lawbreakers launched was the day that the Summer Games was launched. And then they also announced the next day that the PTR would have the 3 new modes and maps, and they did it. And it's like that thing where I say, well, it's kind of business, and it's actually smart business from them. You might think it's undermining and underhanded, but you know, if I had thought of it, I'd feel pretty good about thinking of doing that.
I mean, it depends what way you look at it. Because, the first time, like when this happened with Battleborn and Overwatch, where it was like Battleborn launched its beta and Overwatch immediately launched its beta or something, or they tried to like make sure their releases were scheduled at the same time or a very similar time.
They delayed it a week, so yeah. It was on
and
the
at
same
first
time.
I was like, oh, it's probably just a coincidence, but then it kept happening, and eventually I was like, yeah, well, Overwatch is trying to squash out the competition using its gigantic boot that nobody else has, which, you know, it is kind of shitty depending on which way you look at it. So it's either like they're trying to ruin the opposition, or you could look at it as far as they have this player base. They know maybe some of those players will go play Lawbreakers, or they can just stop that from happening by releasing new content and keeping people engaged, which in that sense, you know, good for them, I guess.
I think it's business, and I think if you can make a game that's good enough to stand on its own, then having Overwatch release some new skins the same day as your game comes out,
you should be able to deal with that.
You should be able to bounce back from that, and things like Lawbreakers, I don't feel that.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They didn't do it to Gigantic.
No.
Because Gigantic wasn't coming to threaten it. It was going for a very different style.
Yeah, Gigantic's almost in its own play space being free to play, because it'll attract a different audience almost.
Yeah.
Probably a similar audience, but also a different audience.
I think it's also interesting, like Overwatch, I think an important thing for them is that it's very easy for new players to jump in, and a lot of hero shooters don't have that. There are still people joining Overwatch now, a year in, going, I've been waiting, I was putting off, I didn't want to join, and now I love it. I remember I didn't get straight on top of Team Fortress when it first came out. I used to avoid online gaming heavily because I thought I was terrible.
Oh, no.
I'm as critical of myself as I am of games.
Team Fortress was one of my first like movements into online gaming.
Yeah. Well, I got into it way, way later, and it's one of those games I feel now there's so many little quirks and things going on with it, and the matchmaking is not phenomenal, and so I found like I went to a game and was completely on the back foot to begin with.
Yes. Well, the problem with Team Fortress and Valve games in general is that there's so many people playing just for hats or just to get like that kind of loot drop. And so many people playing whose accounts get banned and then they just make a new one because it's a free game, that you do get matchmaking issues because the game has no idea what the skill level of these players are, because so many new accounts are going in just to either farm items, farm equipment, or just because, you know, they just started a new account, which is problematic.
I will say one thing for Lawbreakers that I noticed that was quite interesting is mid-match, it noticed that we finished a game and everyone was still playing for the next round. And usually in like Overwatch, that means you'll just stay the same.
Yes.
That's it. If they didn't leave, it's their own fault if they're going to get walked over again. But Lawbreakers actually reshuffled the teams.
Ah.
It went, that wasn't even. So we're going to take you, we're going to put you here, we're going to take you and put you down here.
I've seen other games do that. I wish I remember which off the top of my head.
Destiny, when you do PvP, does a little bit that, but more to the point that it kind of goes, oh, I think this is a bit unbalanced, so we're going to find a whole new
right, yeah.
Rather than just reshuffling.
Well, that's a good idea. It's a shame that so many of the other ideas within that game weren't fully fleshed out by the sounds of it.
It just felt like it was a bit over-designed in some areas and underutilized in others. But I'm excited for this one from the Warframe creators, because I loved Warframe, and it looks fun. It looks Pulp Fiction-y.
I agree. I think Warframe's a great game. I didn't stick with it as long as you did, which seems to be like the theme of this particular episode. You're kind of coming at it from like a real specialization on these hero shooters, because you played them all, whereas I'm always like, I've tried it for a bit, or that looks interesting, but... Yeah.
I think they've got polish, and the testament is that Warframe is actually still profitable.
Yeah, Warframe has a huge player base. My roommate plays Warframe constantly because, you know, they keep updating it.
Yeah.
It had that free-to-play model that just worked and created a fan base.
I stopped probably maybe 2 years ago playing. I just kind of was like, I've got other games that I want to give time to a bit more. But it was one of those games where when I first played it, I immediately went, I really like this, and so I was willing to spend money on it, even though it's free to play, because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I feel like good free to play games that are these hero shooters, people will bond with a hero that they love. Like, there's one hero in Gigantic that I love.
Which one?
And I bought him. Vossler, he's the kind of looks like a fox archer.
Okay.
Completely not who I thought I was going to play. Like, when I looked at him, I'm like, oh, God, an archer. I'm not playing that role. And then I played it, I'm like, he's amazing. He can, like, create a. Illusion of himself and send him off, and he goes invisible and he runs around.
One of those like nimble heroes.
Yeah, and he has like the reason I love it, he has really cool animation where rather than just running, he's kind of like bounding like a fox, and I really like that. It's such a small thing, but I think that's a big thing of hero shooters, is your characters can have these big characteristics about them, and you have people that just bond and connect with the character so much.
I think that's almost why the entire genre is so successful, is just because characters have personality and people grasp onto that, right? Like, it's not the same as, like, say you're playing Battlefield and you play either the sniper or the, you know, scout or whatever. Like, that's not a personality. That's just a trope that they get thrown into. Whereas stuff like Team Fortress was like, no, let's make the characters out of these classes and give them, like, actual personalities. And all of a sudden, it's like people grasped onto that and they mimicked it, and it was successful time and time and time again.
I remember Mass Effect 3, its multiplayer went with kind of like class-based, but each class was kind of a kind of set almost hero, but they just had a class name instead of a hero name. And I remember becoming really connected to like three of them and being like, they are my children and I will protect them and we will kill the Reapers together. So I feel like that happens a big time. Like I said, I eventually want to have Zarya included in a tattoo that I'm doing because I love her so much. I adore her, and I would do anything for her.
Yeah. I'm interested to know, Cam, because you have played so many hero shooters. Is the oversaturation going to be a problem for you? Like, there are so many games coming out in this genre. Is that an issue?
I think so. I think oversaturation is never a good thing, no. I think. We end up with... What'll happen is weaker ones, though, will fall off very quickly.
But is it just weaker, or is it the games that are marketed less, like without these big names following them?
I would find that interesting, because not a lot of people know that Gigantic even exists.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
I feel bad for that. Like, I went on Tumblr and went looking for some artwork for Gigantic, because I really enjoyed it. I wanted to see some... I was like, oh, I wonder what players' fan art exists out there. And it was like one page, and there wasn't much information on it. I was like, oh. And that kind of... sucked. And so it's that point where too many of them, things are going to start to, they can't keep up. And especially when you've got heavy hitters in the mix. If it was all everyone was indie,
yeah,
we wouldn't have a problem. But the problem is not everyone is indie.
But it's so hard for like a Paladins to go up against an Overwatch, isn't it? Because we haven't even talked about Paladins. Is that like low on our radar?
Yeah, I've not. That's one of the few hero ones that I haven't played. And I feel like it's because I don't know. I just see Overwatch again.
Because you can't play them all, right?
You can't play them all.
So you have to pick and choose.
Yeah. And so what happens is you find one that hits exactly what you want, and then you go, this one's different enough that I want to play it. I think that's why I play Overwatch and Gigantic. Gigantic has different mechanics working for it, which is why I'm getting into it.
Well, Gigantic is almost, and correct me if I'm wrong because I haven't played it, but you have, it almost moves into that mobile shooter genre, because you have these, like, what are they, like Colossus or something on either end?
You've got one end is a giant griffin and one end is a giant serpent.
Which
is
cool.
And you serve them, and they're amazing, and I love them. And what happens is your role is to move up towards it, and eventually do enough that you trigger the other Colossus to come down and attack them.
Yeah.
And so, and then you have like towers that you take control of that will essentially help defending the area.
So it's more like Battleborn or like a Super Monday Night Combat, because those games are more rooted in the MOBA side of things rather than the shooter side of things.
Yeah, 100%. I reckon it's steering much more towards MOBA, but without it doesn't have like the cannon fodder characters like Battleborn. But definitely towards the MOBA direction.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that bridge between two genres almost, which is cool, because in a sense, they're all one of the same thing, right? Like, if Battleborn can be completely snubbed out by Overwatch because the audience is so similar, then obviously the genres are similar enough that we may as well categorize them in the same kind of scope. But, you know, mechanically, they are very, very different.
I feel bad for Battleborn, because I remember when I played it at PAX, and I loved it. I had a great time. It was a great... I love cooperative gameplay. And so that took cooperative gameplay mixed with the hero shooter, and it put them together. And I had a great time with it. And then when it came out, I didn't pick it up.
Yeah.
And it went free to play, and I still haven't picked it up. And I just kind of went, I'm not feeling it anymore.
It's disheartening to hear, like, constantly, like, the game isn't doing very well for itself and all that news, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe it was a good game, but, you know, if not many people are playing it, what's the point in me trying, kind of thing?
It reached that point.
And I feel like the same thing happened with Battlecry, which we probably need to talk about before we wrap up.
Yep.
Because this was a game Bethesda was making, and you've also played this at PAX.
Yeah, I played this at PAX. It was a lot of fun. It was kind of like a World War II-ish, but with more of a kind of Team Fortress feel to it.
Right.
It was a had a really nice aesthetic. It was set in kind of crumbling ruins of like a city that might have been bombed during, you know, a flyby by Nazis, but it was definitely like another world. It wasn't like America versus Nazis. There was none of that. It was red and blue. And again, it had a nice amount of character. It had a good mix of melee and ranged characters and skills. And it was kind of going to slip in there ahead of Overwatch and Battleborn in this kind of sudden resurgence. Yeah,
before the genre became the massive thing that it is now. Yeah,
because I played at the PAX before Overwatch and Battleborn were the big thing that everyone was talking about. It was going to be released before them, and then I didn't even notice that it vanished. It wasn't on my radar enough that it just kind of faded. And when you showed it to me today, I'm like, oh, when's that coming out?
I remember that game.
And you were like, oh, it's not. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So the unfortunate thing about Battlecry is that apparently Bethesda just didn't have that much faith in it. Mm. And eventually they dropped the project because it wasn't moving in the direction they wanted, or it wasn't unique enough, or it just didn't get the kind of attention they wanted it to get. And so there was radio silence for a long time. And then they were just like, nah. Not going
to
happen.
It'd be interesting to see the success of hero shooters in the modern gaming world, if maybe it will breathe some new life into it.
Maybe
it needs some polish and it'll come back stronger. But then it's always, every time a hero shooter comes out, everyone's like, oh, it's just Overwatch.
Yeah. Well, that's the unfortunate thing about an oversaturated market, is people get bored of the same concepts over and over again.
Comparisons go crazy with so many of the hero shooters, and the fans get vitriolic about it.
They do, I know. They get
angry.
It's like, if you like Paladins more than Overwatch, you're a terrible person.
Oh my god. And it's totally valid if you would prefer to play Paladins.
Yeah.
You totally can.
There's nothing wrong with Paladins as a game.
There's nothing wrong with it, but if you tell some gamers that, they're like, oh, it's just stolen everything from Overwatch, and then it's not an original idea.
Yeah, whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter.
Calm down. Just calm down.
Yeah.
But it was like Lawbreakers, its whole big thing was, it was like, oh, we're Overwatch, but we're more mature, and it's more about skill. What?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? When you start defaming another of the genre, just so that you can kind of put your foot up, it ends up coming back in your face, because those people who you're trying to get, who love hero shooters, see you ragging out on a game they like.
Yeah.
Why would I go to you?
That's true. Or they're looking to captivate the audience that doesn't like Overwatch. But at that point, it's like, well, they don't like a game that's so similar to your game. Don't try to go for them.
If they don't like Overwatch, they don't like a hero shooter. What are you expecting?
Yeah.
Also, just a quick, before we finish up, we didn't even discuss Quake Champions.
Yeah, which is another upcoming game, which is an arena shooter, but it's still a hero shooter.
I thought it was out.
No, it's not out yet. No. Oh. They've got betas and stuff going, but it's yet to release. But yeah, that's an arena shooter, so it's slightly different kind of combat, but it still has hero shooter elements as far as
because I think the actual you'll be playing as characters, not just classes.
Exactly. Yes. And they have special abilities, although there are game modes that remove that and have the base stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's hero shooters, and that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you guys for joining me on Checkpoint Intimates. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you for having me,
and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.